Welcome to the 2016 WCHL Community Forum, presented by the Town of Chapel Hill Economic Development. Our annual forum features Chapelboro's movers and shakers debating the big issues affecting our community and you. And it begins now.
Welcome into the WCHL Community Forum Transit Hour. Of course, moving people about our community, always a priority for local governments here in our area, Chapel Hill, Carrboro, Orange County as a whole. That always presents challenges. Those challenges go beyond just maintaining those vehicles that do move residents and visitors around town. We'll be addressing these issues during this hour of the WCHL Community Forum. We are joined this hour by Chapel Hill Town Council Member Ed Harrison, Chapel Hill Transit Director Brian Litchfield, Patrick McDonough of Go Triangle, and a couple of community members as well who have been very involved in this, Alex Cabanis and John Martin. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. My name is Blake Hodge here with WCHL, and we've got a lot to get to in this hour, so we'll get right into it. Well, we do want to start with a bit of an opening comment from everybody, if you will, of what you view as the biggest challenge to transit just in our community and the growing region as public transit continues to pick up some steam here. We'll begin here at the top of the table with Alex Cabanis.
Wow. So I think one of the biggest challenges that we have with public transit is that the population density and how do you actually grow based off of the changing growth patterns, the changes in demographics. You've got aging population, you've got accelerating technology adoption, you've got connectivity and how do you integrate to the broader community. So I think that, you know, where this is probably a good first step to do a connection between Chapel Hill and Durham, what's the bigger question for the whole Triangle area?
We'll move down alphabetically here to Chapel Hill Town Council Member Ed Harrison.
Well, the biggest challenge I'm facing this morning is that the next place I go with Brian Litchfield, which is what we call the Partners Committee, Public Transit Committee. We call it the Partners because it is this vital partnership between University of North Carolina and Chapel Hill, which is the main funder of our transit system. It pays more than the federal and state governments put together, and Chapel Hill and Carrboro. And the challenge we face every month when we get together is maintaining the remarkably high level of service we have, serving people in Chapel Hill and Carrboro, bringing people in from two other counties. We're actually a three-county system. I catch my bus in County Woods and Durham County. Also increasing that service, we have help through the half-cent sales tax benefits, the bus and rail plan for Orange County. But really, it is maintaining that level of service, and a lot of that right now is scrambling to get vehicles. We have, as Brian points out to the Daily Tar Heel reporters, vehicles that are older than they are. I got a Facebook post about one of them this morning. Brian, 734 has a bad belt. Eleanor Murray, formerly CHL, always lets me know about this stuff. But that's a challenge, keeping the buses running. Brian knows a lot more about the breakdown rates, but it's worrisome.
And
anyway, so down to brass tacks, just keeping up our level of service.
We'll hop over the table there to Brian Litchfield, Director of Chapel Hill Transit, and same question to you.
Well, thank you, and happy to be here this morning. I think, as Councilmember Harrison pointed out, one of the benefits of Chapel Hill Transit is that it's a long-standing relationship between the University of Chapel Hill, the town of Carrboro, and the town of Chapel Hill. And without that partnership, we wouldn't have the service and the levels of operation that we have today. And our biggest challenge, as Councilmember mentioned, is short-term addressing our capital needs. We've got 42 buses that are beyond their useful life. The good news is we've made some significant efforts thanks to commitments by all of our funding partners to begin replacing those vehicles and doing things and investing in them in a different way than we've ever had to do in the past as a result of changes at the federal and state level. And one of the other challenges for us is trying to maintain that service while planning for the future and taking a look at what Chapel Hill Transit should be and what it will look like 10, 15 years from now.
We'll go down with John Martin joining us this morning. Thank you for taking some time out of your schedule. And whenever you think about transit in our region. What are some of the top things in your mind?
Well, I am from Durham, and so that's what I know about. And the problems in Durham is quite simply the sprawl that has already developed. I mean, Durham now stretches from Traburn in the north to soon 751 south in the south, south of South Point. And covering all of that area with public transportation is just really not possible. It hasn't been possible, and it's been extremely difficult for vital people. I was just talking to the president of Durham Tech, who was in the previous forum, and we have a northern campus at Durham Tech that no longer has bus service. It used to have bus service. It no longer has it. And that means that certain poorer students can't take classes there. They have to go to the main campus. And having taught at Durham Tech, I saw how many poor students were dependent upon public transportation. So it's a real problem, and it's going to be difficult to solve.
And one person who is planning on bringing all of it together, right? It's Patrick McDonough here with Go Triangle. Thank you for joining us, and what's on your mind from Go Triangle's perspective?
Sure. First, thank you, Blake, for having us here, and thanks to WCHL for having this important conversation. It's great to have an hour dedicated to transit. I think as I look out, as I'm somebody who works on long-range transportation issues, but I'm also a Chapel Hill Carborough resident, and I'm somebody who rides the CW bus and the JNEF a lot. We have sort of a problem of opportunity here, which is that right now, the Durham-Chapel Hill metropolitan area has recently become one of the top 100 metro areas in the United States. And while it's joined the top 100 just very recently, it's one of the 15 fastest growing. And so we have a lot of people coming here for good jobs, for relatively affordable quality of life, good schools, the natural amenities that we love about this place so much. And so part of the challenge, though, is as people come here, they add to the transportation system. And so when we look at our data, if you've ever been on Google Maps and tried to project a travel time at 5 o'clock, you will see that it gives you a wide range of travel times. And as we look at some of that data, which we're subscribers to at Go Triangle, we've noticed that we're losing about a minute a year between Chapel Hill and Durham along 15501. So we're about 10 years away from light rail opening, and there's another potential 10 minutes of loss. So what that means sort of is two things. If you're a motorist in that traffic, it's getting harder for you to get to work every day. But if you're a bus rider, and you're on any of our buses, Go Durham, Go Triangle, Duke Transit, Chapel Hill Transit, your buses are increasingly unreliable and having a harder time getting to that place. So part of what I think our challenge is as a place that has done reasonably well with transit in Durham and Chapel Hill compared to other metropolitan areas is how to sort of secure that success and build on it. And I think some of the stuff I'm sure we'll talk about today is we have projects like Durham Orange Light Rail and the mm-hmm. North-South Corridor and Chapel Hill Transit that look at dedicating their own right-of-way or their own lanes or their own tracks to transit to make sure that transit stays reliable now and into the future.
And of course, we'll get to the light rail discussion, which has been such a big issue in our community over the last year, developing seeming like some progress made there, and then having a little bit of restriction placed by the General Assembly initially here, and we'll of course see how that goes forward. But sticking with a bit more Chapel Hill Transit here, Mr. Litchfield, whenever we're looking at some of the more environmentally friendly options, that of course is always a topic of conversation in our community, and with the opportunity to go forward purchasing new actual vehicles here for Chapel Hill Transit, what are some of the options that are being considered here?
Well, yeah, that's always something that we're very much interested in. Chapel Hill Transit has been one of the leaders in utilizing alternatively powered vehicles. We're one of the first in the state to purchase hybrid buses, and if not one of the first, the first to implement articulated hybrid buses. And we've been utilizing them for a long time. We've also implemented a system, what's called a mini hybrid system, that we utilize on our diesel powered buses as well too, as one of the first systems in the state to do that as well. So we're always interested in utilizing and taking advantage of technologies that lessen our carbon footprint and our impact on the environment. Going forward, at least for this next bus purchase or two, we're going to be purchasing diesel powered vehicles. We think that that's in our best interest to be purchasing them. We're also seeing that these vehicles have very similar miles per gallon and carbon footprints to the hybrid buses. So we think it's a pretty good deal for us. And a big part of that is we've got 42 that need to be replaced now. So while we want to look at other options, we're going to be pursuing funding and also evaluating electric buses, CNG, hydrogen fueled. Going to be looking at all those things in the near future in order to meet our existing need today. We're going to be purchasing the clean diesel buses.
Councilmember Harrison.
This discussion of alternative fuel buses is, to me, one of the things I'm looking forward to most at the meeting, starting 11:15, having a resident I've known for a while come in and give his case on what kind of consulting explorations we need to make in terms of electric buses. His interest, but we'll be looking at others too. One thing that Brian pointed out was that we were about the first system in the state to buy what he called articulated buses. Those are accordion buses. They carry as many people as a bus can carry, which is, I think, the crush load is about 100. That means you don't want to fall over because you'll crush somebody else. So that's the cap for buses, is 100 people. And we're running hybrid ones, we'll run whatever power source works out best for them. Another, aside from the vehicles themselves, something in terms of building the community, in terms of being environmentally friendly, is we need to develop a robust sidewalk network particularly. That's one of my, one of the flags I raise high. We have our first pedestrian plan ever that I can recall being done right now. The citizens voted heavily for a bond issue in the fall for sidewalks and bike space. And one of the things that can come along with the federal government helping to fund a high capacity transit project is some money for sidewalks. That's part of the cost, and it really helps. So that's something beyond vehicles and technology themselves, is that larger community building picture of getting it so people can get to transit.
Mr. Cabanis.
Yes, I'd like to go back to a statement about the clean diesel and the hybrid. I think the one thing that's really come to the forefront, especially with the emissions situation with Volkswagen, is that clean diesel is probably a dispelled rumor at this point. The diesel hybrid buses will get approximately 5 miles to the gallon, versus the electric buses or the e-buses are in the 17 to 22 miles to the gallon. So substantially much more environmentally friendly to go with an e-bus than a hybrid diesel.
Mr. Litchfield, do you have a response to that, or are there other factors that need to be brought into the conversation there?
We certainly understand that there are technologies out there that provide better miles per gallon than the diesel. But I also think we need to, as we're looking at those technologies, we need to make sure that we're investing in the one that works the best for our community, and that we understand all of the externalities related to those technologies and take that into account. And I think that's something that we'll be doing as part of the study or the response to the electric bus petition that Councilmember Harrison mentioned, is take a look at all of those things and make sure we're making a decision about what's best for us. Again, a few years ago when we were looking at hybrid buses, what we know now, if we knew now what we did, if we knew now, or we knew then
we
what
knew
we did
now,
we now. sorry, my caffeine's still kicking in, we may have made different choices at the time, quite frankly. So we've learned things about those buses, maintenance costs and replacement costs for batteries and things like that that weren't being talked about, or we weren't aware of them at the time as a result of it being a fairly new technology. So long way of saying, again, we just want to make sure as we evaluate these technologies that we're investing in the one that's going to have the biggest payoff for our funders and for our community.
Councilmember Harrison, I want to bring something up that was brought up in the town and gown segment to start off the day, whenever we had leaders from around the different local governments and the university talking about planning for additional expansion of routes and then planning for housing along corridors and really incorporating all of that. What's the Chapel Hill Town Council doing to try to bring all of that picture together?
Well, if anyone mentioned the UNC master plan, which I hope somebody did, we're waiting to know more about it. We know that UNC Chapel Hill has changed its geographic direction from pointing north to Carolina North to going east along NC-54, which is where we propose a number of stations. UNC owns a whole lot of land around Friday Center and also owns land further east, just east side of Meadowmont. And we're assuming they will fill it, just as they filled the main campus. The main campus is about as densely used as anywhere public in the state, far more than downtown Raleigh. It has 20 plus million square feet of non-residential space and a whole lot of transit serving it. And so we're assuming UNC will want that level of transit served in some cases by high capacity transit, by light rail, we hope, or in terms of very local delivery, say shuttle buses. UNC is fully committed to building out. Again, we don't have a feel for it. I mean, I've been asking the transportation planner I know best. He says we're still waiting. There's a whole lot of studying going on, but we understand that in this calendar year we'll start hearing a lot. The flow chart for that master plan was the first one I'd ever seen that showed the Chapel Hill Town Council as someone who would be a participant. So does that help to answer?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, particularly the healthcare sector of UNC, which is not the same employer as the university, it's a mm-hmm. different employer. It is, like the university, one of the top 10 employers in the state in size. But healthcare is an industry that is growing and growing and growing. We keep getting older and we keep getting sick. So the business is going to be there. I know the statement some years ago by the former vice chancellor who dealt with transit was it's getting to be so that unless you have something really weird, we're going to find somewhere else to treat you besides the main campus. But it is the main public hospital for the state, and so a lot of people will keep coming to the main campus, and then we are seeing a lot of clinics and office buildings spreading out elsewhere. We're trying as a council to keep UNC expansions within Chapel Hill if at all possible. We're hoping that at some point the legislature can see the wisdom of helping to build some infrastructure at Carolina North. But that's theoretical right now.
We had Mr. Litchfield, and then we'll hop over to Mr. Cabanis.
So just a quick aside to that is we were talking before we came in here about some of the needs within Chapel Hill and Carrboro and what it would take to make connections between neighborhoods and some different things along those lines. And one of the things that I brought up and will suggest again is we need to really take a look at our service Saturdays, Sundays, late night evenings, those sort of things. We've got very good service thanks to our funding partners. Monday through Friday and a reasonable level of service on Saturday, but we really struggle to be able to provide service and have not been able to do so effectively on weekends. And one of the things in order to make those connections and really provide transit as a source that folks can utilize on a regular basis, regardless of kind of where they're at, is to be able to have that service 7 days a week. And so I think that's something that between our funding partners and working with our partners at Go Triangle and Orange County through the Orange County Bus and Rail Investment Plan, some of the things we need to look at in matching up with Go Triangle's expansion of their service to Chapel Hill and Carrboro on Sundays already. So that's something that we need to do soon.
Mr. Cabanis.
Yeah, I'd like to go back to something that Mr. Harrison said with regard to the UNC properties. A lot of the UNC property, at least along the NC-54 corridor, are on the north side closest to Meadowmont. Mm-hmm. Ironically, the light rail is not on that side. So if it was on that side, it would probably make a lot more sense. I think the other thing that we're seeing is that not just UNC Hospital, but organizations in general are distributing their services, whether it's clinics for UNC Hospital to Hillsborough or other locations, again, way outside of the light rail corridor. So I think the challenge is how do you actually service the changing geographical preferences of not just the population and how the hospitals and other businesses go to service them through a very static light rail corridor.
I want to talk to Mr. McDonough a little bit about the connection and the the work with Chapel Hill Transit and then trying to really connect a large area here in the region. How does that relationship work, and then what are some of the things that you are most hoping to see, I guess, be able to work on some of these things in terms of developing some of the secondary transit, I guess it could be, and we'll talk about light rail more in a moment, but if a corridor like that does come in.
Sure. Well, I think to respond a little bit to something Mr. Cabana said a moment ago is that first we did look actually at trying whether or not it made sense to place the light rail on the north side of 54 as we work with the Army Corps of Engineers who control the north side of the property further down as you go past Meadowmont. We heard from them that that was not preferable, that they preferred us being in the alignment that we're in, which is within the NC-54, NC-DOT right-of-way towards the south side of 54. I think the other thing is, Alex is correct, that the there's more nodes of activity occurring all in different places of our community, but I think the piece where I would disagree a bit is that that's meaning that some of the places that are already our strong centers are somehow declining in importance. And I think with the medical stuff we see is, for example, there's a new Duke medical clinic over near South Point that's been there about 5 or 7 years. And so there's some things that are less critical care that have moved out of Duke Hospital to that location, just as UNC Hospital has moved some other less critical functions. Like I think there's a dermatology clinic up at UNC Hospital Hillsborough, for example. But what they're doing is, as the population continues to grow, they're consolidating the folks who have the most critical needs, heart surgery, all those really important critical things. We're having the 24/7 generators and all the staff who are highly specialized. Those continue to be sort of key pieces with our major nodes like UNC Hospital, Duke Hospital, et cetera. So it's not either or, it's both and. We're growing in our cores and we're growing on our peripheries too. Getting to your question, Blake, about how we try to coordinate with what we're doing with Chapel Hill Transit. I think there's been several, some of these things are very minor, but a hat tip to Chapel Hill Transit that they did a couple years ago when we were adding some additional frequencies to our Chapel Hill to Raleigh bus. Brian's staff realized that the NS bus was going up MLK just a little bit after the most popular trip to Raleigh. And so his team said, what if we moved it back so folks who wanted to get from Southern Chapel Hill and catch the express to Raleigh could come up and be there before the express bus? So that was a great opportunity sort of on the teamwork. There are lots of things we do together already. We have a unified call center. So there's one number you can call, 919-485-RIDE. Get questions answered for any transit agency in the region. We have a combined website. And if you've ever done planning a trip on Google Maps, all the transit agencies work together to pump transit data so you can do Google Transit. So all of those are ways that we try to coordinate today in the real world. I think in terms of going forward, when it comes to things about how are we growing in the future, Brian raised a great example with Sunday service. We, as part of the Orange County Bus and Rail Investment Plan, which includes in Orange County a bus expansion for Chapel Hill Transit, Go Triangle, and OPT, and then also a train station in Hillsborough, which we may or may not talk about today, it might be interesting, and also the light rail component. We've been making those adjustments together, and we expanded on Sunday in Durham and Chapel Hill and Raleigh, and so we're looking at, is there a good opportunity to partner with Brian's team on when they do that expansion? I think the other thing is we look forward to the future with light rail. When you make a big investment in something like light rail, the federal government says you must do a bus rail integration plan. They say that's just sort of a bare minimum of thing you should do. So we're required to look at that. So when we do that planning, we look at what's going on with Chapel Hill Transit and ask them, well, how might you guys change your route if the station's here? And we begin to think about how to build a network of bus and rail working together so that people can make a whole sort of new set of trips that they couldn't make on the bus-only network. But those are just a few of the ways we work together, and it's a good partnership. It's been going for years, and we're excited to work on it.
Well, I want to hop down to Mr. Martin there. Coming from the Durham point of view on this and kind of seeing a little further development of trying to cover a large amount of area and now connecting the regions, are there any things that, short of light rail, which we'll turn to here in just a few minutes, that are concerning for you as you see the planning phase play out of this?
Well, I think in Durham there is a large part of the population that is dependent upon public transportation that is concentrated in the east part of Durham. I used to live in, I still live in east, not technically East Durham, but the eastern side of Durham. And I see how many people are dependent upon public transportation. Where I used to live, which was even more to the east, I would see elderly people going down the street in front of me in the street in their motorized wheelchairs. And that was their means of transportation. They couldn't afford cars. And if the bus service didn't come down that street, that's how they were getting around. So I don't know how we're going to be able to address the kinds of needs that those people have. I doubt personally that light rail is a solution to that, though.
Mr. McDonough?
Sure. So I think first John and Ed together have flagged a really important issue, which is sort of the first mile, last mile. When you look at the people who ride, go Durham, go Triangle, Chapel Hill, John's absolutely right. I think it's over 90 or even 95% of the trips begin and end with walking. There's a smaller park and ride component there too, but right now, if you're on foot, that's the way your transit trip begins or ends. So the quality of the on-foot experience matters a ton. The condition John's talking about, when we passed the Durham referendum, one of the things our staff did was we looked at what we refer to as three transit emphasis corridors. The one stretching out to East Durham in particular is along Holloway Street. And so one of the things we did with routes 3 and 16 is we moved service from every 30 minutes to every 15 minutes so that people had more choices. But we also know, as John mentioned, that walking environment is really subpar. And so we have a program of, I think it's 20 different bus shelters on that corridor alone, plus where's the sidewalk missing? There are missing teeth in the sidewalk all the way along, filling those in. And we're working with the city of Durham to prioritize those investments. But there's another need out there that we're trying to address as well, which is the Village Transit Center in East Durham is the second highest boarding stop in the Go Durham system outside of Durham Station. And so we're trying to put a neighborhood transit center out there where you'll be able to make bus-to-bus transfers in a... There's five roads that come together near that intersection. It's not a good walking environment.
No.
If you're a parent with a stroller, if you're somebody who's using a walker, it's just subpar, and we know it. And so we're working with the city to figure out how to get a transit center off there that works for those folks working together. In terms of the connection with the light rail, one of the things we've been looking at is that bus-rail integration piece. We did study at request of the Durham City Council about... getting light rail east of Alston Avenue. There are some, what we believe are insurmountable obstacles with the North Carolina Railroad, which controls the land where you would put the light rail in that area. There's also a second railroad, CSX, there's a freight yard, and then there's also a historic water tower that you can see when you drive along NC 147. When we spoke to the city water department, they said nobody in Durham has the plans because it was built before the 30s, and they were concerned that if we drilled for bridges for rail, we might actually unstabilize or destabilize the water tower. So when all those came together, we wound up moving the station back to the east side of Alston Avenue, which is about a quarter mile. And we recognize that some folks were really disappointed by that. And so what we're trying to figure out with things like transit emphasis corridors, the Village Transit Center, is how do you, again, building a bus and rail network, make those function together. We are actually, though, there's the pedestrian bridge I'm sure John's familiar with over 147. One of the commitments of the rail project is to build a sidewalk from the rail station on the west side of Alston all the way to the bridge. So we're trying to knit that connection together where we can, recognizing that that's important.
Mr. Martin?
Yeah, I would just say that, as you said, a quarter mile, of course, if you are over 65 and you're the sidewalks are poor in your neighborhood and you're in a wheelchair, that's a lot. That's a very, very, and I'm not saying that even as criticism of you, I'm just simply saying that's a tough nut to crack.
Oh, that's absolutely true, and that's why the sidewalk projects and getting the bus to rail connections are so important. You're absolutely right.
Mr. Litchfield.
I'd echo that. Again, I'm not as familiar with the Durham side of it, but one of the things that we're doing in Chapel Hill and Carrboro is implementing a study of our top 100 bus stops in the system and making sure that not only are they accessible, but they also are connecting up and making connections with sidewalks, greenways, trails, anything else that we can make those connections with, and trying to align resources. So as Councilmember Harrison mentioned earlier, so there's bond funds are going to be dedicated to some sidewalk connections. So trying to find ways as improvements are made in certain areas where we're making sure the transit stops are improved at the same time, if and when possible, because making those connections and providing environments for customers to wait for buses are absolutely critical to our customers and to our success.
We've mentioned light rail a few times. That has obviously been a major discussion point of how do we connect our community to specifically Durham, and then the initial discussion was over into Raleigh as well, which has seen its share of bumps along the way. And then the General Assembly, very late in the very long session last year, putting a spending cap of $500,000 on light rail projects. if that doesn't get removed, obviously there will be other avenues that will have to be ventured down. But Mr. McDonough, to bring you into this, where do we stand right now in that whole mess of different things coming together?
First, Blake, I want to say I think you did a good job of sort of rewinding us through some of the history about the cap there. Go Triangles right now, we're working with our project supporters to try to get the cap removed. And earlier this month, a House Select Committee that is charged with managing long-range transportation and planning and funding met, and they actually gave a unanimous vote recommending the light rail cap be removed to the general House body. As we're all aware, the General Assembly came to town yesterday. So there's really, the session is beginning and folks are kind of waiting to see what happens. I think overall, the key thing from us, from the Go Triangle perspective, is we're, like I said, working with project supporters to get the cap lifted. The law that gave funding to the light rail project, the Strategic Transportation Investments Law, was passed in 2013. It was designed to make transportation decision-making a data-driven process. And we know that there's a lot of interest in all parts of the General Assembly in keeping transportation a data-driven exercise. And there's a lot of pride in the law that was passed, which I think does many good things. And so we're confident there's an opportunity in this session to address the cap to get it removed. And we're at the beginning, so we'll see.
They've got a couple of things that have taken up some time, or that I anticipate will take up their time in the next few days, but we'll see when we can get to discussing that. Mr. Gamatis, I want to bring you into this because this is a discussion we've had, not on the air per se, but just informational discussions in the past of what do you see as challenges in the as-proposed light rail plan?
Well, I think there's a lot of issues with the current implementation proposal. I think one of the things is, even if the cap gets removed, the $500,000 legislative cap gets removed, and it gets reinstated as the STIP, or the 10% cap, that still leaves $262 million unaccounted for. So where's that $262 million going to be coming from? I think in addition, when you start looking at other benchmarks, whether you're looking at the Charlotte experience and other communities around the nation, what you see is that the estimated $94 million per mile that's currently projected for the Durham-Orange Light Rail is perhaps a little bit optimistic. If you look at the Charlotte BLE extension, I think the number came in at about $126 million per mile. So that would basically raise the 1.6 closer to a $2.1 million expenditure. And I suspect that our landscape, our topology, is a bit more challenging than that of Charlotte. So I think from an economics perspective, that's a big challenge. I think the other challenge is with regard to population density and how many riders would actually be riding the light rail. I think that has an economic impact to ongoing operating and maintenance costs. When the BRIP, the Bus Rail Investment Plan, was announced early on, I think circa 2011, 2012, the estimated annual budget was on the order of about $5 million. That number is now standing or projected to be about $18 million as of 2016 with final environmental impact study. So that's almost four times the original projection. So where's that money going to be coming from? And I think that when you look at the actual ridership, 23,000 boardings, which basically represents about 11,500 people, because I assume people want to get back home once they've taken the light rail, is quite optimistic. Again, looking at benchmarks like Charlotte, that's been in operation almost 8 years. Their daily boarding has been static at about 16,000 daily boardings, yet we're projecting 23. Their population is substantially higher. Their growth has grown 17% over that period of time, yet they have the worst traffic congestion in all of North Carolina. So I think those are some fundamental issues that imply or suggest that light rail may not be the best solution for our particular environment. And things like BRT or bus rapid transit would potentially be more compelling for the area.
Councilmember Harrison, I know this is something you've been involved with for a long time in terms of transit and environmental studies. So what's your response to that?
Yeah, involved, since I was a kid in New York City, so going on 60 years. Got active on it in the late 80s when I was a Durham City resident because we were starting to talk about it then. In the 90s, I ended up being, by the end of the decade, the most vocal advocate for bus rapid transit in the region, probably in the state. I had the op-eds. I actually did my own trips for the Ottawa bus rapid transit system, just like the elected officials did here, but I had a wife that had to go there for work. Even to the point of meeting with the executive vice president of Duke University about having the technology for transit between Duke and UNC. What happened at the same time in the late 90s was that the UNC student body voted to impose fees on themselves so that the transit system would go fare free, January 2nd, 2002. Wasn't even sworn in as a council member 3 weeks when that happened. And the ridership for that system, Chapel Hill Transit, quadrupled over the decade. And the numbers really got too big for bus rapid transit. I said earlier, any bus we know in the world can safely carry no more than 100 people. A rail vehicle that lasts, by the way, 2.5 times as long as a bus, very likely, can carry, I believe it's up to past 500 people in the same conditions.
Three-car train, 500.
Yeah, three-car train, and since it's a train, you can add cars. You can start with two, and I grew up watching subways, in Long Island Railroad that had a lot of cars, which had been added over time. So you start with a system that, per trip, can carry 4 to 5 times as many people as a bus. And when you have as many people needing to get into these major employment centers, the three of the 10 largest in the state, Duke West Campus, which is a big place, and UNC Main Campus, you really have to run more trips and have more drivers, 4 or 5 times as many trips, 4 or 5 times as many drivers, 4 or 5 times as many stops for traffic, since the idea for these systems is that they get the right of way. They don't stop for traffic. So it operationally it becomes a lot better deal over time. The capital costs are high. If you want to do true bus rapid transit, which is what the federal government wants to fund now, the operational costs can be higher because they can't carry as many passengers, but the capital costs can be high too because of having to reconstruct the roads. The alternative we're talking about for Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard, the North-South Corridor involves reconstructing Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard in a big way. So it's a pretty pricey system in itself. But I still advocate where the numbers fit it, I will advocate bus rapid transit as I do in the North-South Corridor. But in terms of moving a lot of people and in terms of the academic environment, having a lot of stations in a small area, there are a line of stations in from east to west Durham, averaging a mile apart, same as the UNC campus too. You need a lighter rail vehicle that can stop faster, and that's what you can get with commuter rail. What I used to ride growing up in New York City, you had much longer station spacing. So to get the kind of spacing that the city of Durham wants, you have to have a lighter approach.
We've got Mr. Cabanis, and then we'll go to Mr. McDonough.
Yeah, I think, the comparison to New York City is somewhat of an anomaly.
I wasn't compared to New York City.
Okay, because New York City basically represents over half of all public transit usage in the United States. I think that the BRT is a much lesser cost alternative. When you compare on a per mile basis, the light rail system at $94 million per mile. BRT, if you take the MLK north-south corridor that's being proposed, is 7 miles at approximately $100 million. So per lane, it's substantially less than what you would be able to do with light rail. I think the other anomaly is that we concentrate the discussion on capacity of light rail, but we don't have a discussion about utilization. And I think that if you look at the 23,000 projected daily boardings, which I still think is overly optimistic, over 150 train trips during the course of the day, 17 miles, that means that on average, you're going to have 9 passengers per travel mile. So what does that really mean? That means that for every one train that you have, say, 60 passengers traveling, let's just say the 17 mile length, that's 113 miles that train is going to be traveling empty. That's the equivalent of over 6 full length trips that the bus or the light rail will be running empty. So the economics for this density population doesn't work.
Mr. McDonough, you know, you're eager to jump in here.
Be glad to talk. There's several things in there worth responding to. I think I've been writing down some of the things that Mr. Cabana shared, but I guess, Blake, I'll go back to the cap first about if the cap's removed, there's still more funding to be considered. And that's correct. I mean, I think the key thing to think about with a project like this, it's a very large project, it takes a long time to complete. It is very common to be securing pieces of funding in, you know, segments. We have local funding, we are presuming a 50% federal share. Charlotte got 25% shares for their light rail project, and we've used that as a model. So when Go Triangle was appropriated the $138 million in the STIP, that was sort of a little under 10%. But in terms of where we are in the project process, it's not uncommon to not have all the funding secured about, you know, 3.5 years out from construction, which is roughly where we are. And so if you look at where the federal government would rate the project, if you had our local share and the 138 in the state, at this point they would rate us as above average in terms of other projects similar in size and scope around the country and having our funding ducks in a row. So naturally we're going to continue to work with our state partners to figure out how we can look at, you know, getting to the full share there. On the cost estimate, I think Mr. Cabanis is right that when you make a major infrastructure investment, you should be concerned about capital cost. The Blue Line extension, I think, is a little bit different from where we are here. A lot of that project is in Tryon Road, and so as Councilor Harrison mentioned, rebuilding MLK, Tryon Road is a bigger road in many of its sections than MLK is, and you're putting in a bigger piece of infrastructure in the middle of it with flyover bridges, and so there's significant cost there. And I think one of the things that Durham and Chapel Hill, a credit to both the City Council in Durham and the Town Council in Chapel Hill, is there have been many decisions to reserve the right-of-way. UNC reserved space on their campus for the light rail path. When Durham made decisions about siting some of its facilities, they left space for the light rail path. We are in the extra space of a few DOT right-of-ways, such as NC-54 and I-40, and also along US-15-501 in Durham. So in all of those places, we have had some sort of good strategic spaces left for us. On Irwin Road in Durham, great decision. I don't know who made it. Councilor Harrison might know, but at one point, when the buildings built along Irwin and Maureen were put in, where the Nosh restaurant is, for example, they had them set back an extra 30 feet from the street because they knew one day they would widen to put the light rail in the center. So that's, instead of acquiring a building, we'll just acquire land. And that's a cost savings that I don't think in the Charlotte project, those type of strategic steps weren't taken in the Tryon corridor. And so that's where I think we do have some optimism there. Of course, we're also going to look at, are there ways that we can, you know, manage cost? And, you know, we'll do that as the project life goes on. Alex said something about $5 million for light rail operations. I don't know where you got that figure. That has never been one of the operations figures. We've had it in the range of, I think, $14 million to our latest estimate, around $17.9 to $18.1 million. Some of those changes in the operating costs have come due to inflation, which is the natural increase in dollar value of things over time, but also in response to some changes in the alignment that we made for the community. We found a different way to cross New Hope Creek at the request of the New Hope Creek Advisory Commission, which Councilor Harrison's been involved with years. It did make the running time a little bit longer. Also in downtown Durham, as we worked with North Carolina Railroad to be adjacent to the rail corridor, but also managing our interface with Pettigrew Street, which is an important east-west artery in a portion of the city that doesn't have many east-west arteries, we wound up having to make the train a little slower there. And so when you did that, it does extend the runtime, which makes the operating cost go up a bit. So yes, there was a change in the cost, but we were doing it in response to some of the things that the community was requesting. On the ridership piece, I think a couple things. Charlotte does have 16,000 people boarding. They're boarding over 9.7 miles. And so, you know, we're proposing a 17.1 mile line. I think our ridership is reasonable. If you look at Durham and Chapel Hill today, today, as we're all sitting here in this room and folks are out going to work and going to school, over 70,000 people will board Chapel Hill Transit, Go Triangle, Go Durham, and Duke Transit buses in Durham and Orange counties alone, excluding Wake County. And we're 10 years away from when light rail is due to open. The year before light rail opened in Charlotte, they carried about 71 or 72,000. And as Mr. Kapanis noted, they have a much larger population. And we're getting as many people on buses as they did 10 years earlier, even though we have a smaller population. And that gets to some of the items about how hard it is to park on our campuses. So I think overall, we do have a very strong case that people are going to ride here because we see people riding today in large numbers.
Mr. Martin, I know you raised your hand, and then we'll have to, we do have to get a break in here to let people get to another meeting that's going on.
Yeah, I was just going to say, first of all, with regard to that ridership figure, it's a little bit suspect because you're including Duke Transit, and as everybody knows, I think, Duke has two campuses, and they have free buses that run back and forth with students. Students can ride that bus four or five times a day just going from classes on the two campuses. So that doesn't really give a good prediction of how much ridership you're going to have on the light rail system. I want to go back to the cap, though, because the criticism of the cap has been, well, the legislature shouldn't interfere in this data-driven process whereby DOT came up with $138 million for state money. But as Alex said, where is the other $262 million going to come from? And it seems to me at the start of this project, this should be something that is very carefully thought out. I asked Representative Greg Meyer this question, and he said he didn't know, but he would ask those of you from TTA. And you said, well, you want the legislature to come back with that money at some time in the future. That's what he told me. So you are depending upon the legislature to intervene and to come back with money. Even after criticizing the legislature for trying to stop appropriating money. Where is that $262 million going to come from? We've talked about all the needs that we already have in transportation, of sidewalks, of increased bus service, of new buses. Is it going to come out of that? Is it going to come out of money from Buncombe County's transportation needs? Is it going to come out of Medicaid funds? I think that this needs to be put clearly on the table before we get started on this project.
And we are at a point here where I know we do need to stop for just a minute, and then we'll take about a 90-second break here and come back in as we continue here on the WCHL Community Forum.
Chapel Hill is open.
Chapel Hill is open to the arts.
Chapel Hill is open to diversity.
To education.
To collaboration.
To transit.
To foodies.
To innovation.
To progress.
To the environment.
To light rail.
To craft brews.
To affordable housing.
To city parks.
To kids.
To connectivity.
To business.
To culture.
To green.
To smart growth.
Chapel Hill is open to family.
Chapel Hill is open.
Chapel Hill is open to you.
For more information, visit open2.biz.
Summer is rapidly approaching, and fall will be here before you know it. Need some extra courses to help you prepare for college? Need to complete your high school diploma or get a GED? Looking for training or certification to help you get that dream job? Classes begin May 16th, so visit durhamtech.edu and search summer registration. Schedule a meeting with an academic advisor who will give you access to our web registration system. You'll be amazed at the great selection of interesting courses you'll find. And get ready to do great things.
Texting to 911 is coming to Orange County. It's provided by all wireless carriers that cover Orange County, but not all counties have the service. Texting to 911 is best used when you are unable to talk due to your safety or functional needs. It's always better to dial 911 and explain your emergency to a live telecommunicator. Remember, call if you can, text if you can't. Never text and drive.
Welcome back to the 2016 WCHL Community Forum presented by the Town of Chapel Hill Economic Development. Thanks to our sponsors, Brooke Pierce,
Chapel Hill Downtown Partnership, Durham Tech, Jersey Mike's, Kidzoo Children's Museum, Maria Finnegan Fitness, Molly Maid of Chapel Hill, and Orange County Government. Once again, here's Blake Hodge.
Welcome back into the WCHL Community Forum Transit Panel. We have had a lively discussion so far, and we'll wrap it up here in the next few minutes. Mr. Gabanis, I believe you had your hand up as we were needing to squeeze that break in here, so we'll let you start off this last few minutes here.
Thank you. I think just going back to a comment that Patrick McDonough stated about the funding, with the BRT, the federal government would actually be willing to contribute up to 80% or $100 million. So it's not only a much more cost-effective alternative, but it's also subsidized, or the grants are much higher from a percentage perspective. And so what I would offer to the listeners is, for folks who want to get more information on the web, please visit smarttransitfuture.org. And you can see the different points of view that perhaps have not been captured or reflected within the GO Triangle narrative.
Patrick, I want to ask you something about what Councilmember Harrison brought up earlier in terms of the lifespan of a light rail car versus the buses, which, of course, we've had issues with needing to maintain. As operating both, there are potentially operating both, what is the projections looking at in terms of comparison?
Sure. Generally, a light rail vehicle life, very simply, Blake, is usually about 40 years. A heavy-duty bus is about 12 years. Brian's staff has a team of incredible people who get more years of life out of those things than anybody. So hats off to the Chapel Hill Transit staff for making those things work. I think, in terms of the question Mr. Commandant raised about the federal match for BRT, yes, you can get up to 80% matching for a BRT project. That BRT project, though, is probably a much smaller project. It's in what a program called Small Starts rather than the Federal New Starts program. If you look at BRT projects that perform like the Durham Orange Light Rail does in terms of having higher travel speeds, those projects tend to be more 50% match, and they tend to be in the multiple hundreds of millions of dollars. For smaller projects, the feds will give you a greater match, but those smaller projects tend to have smaller benefits. The light rail average speed, even after we've made some lengthenings of the running time, is about 23 miles an hour average speed end-to-end. It has a top speed of 55 in certain segments. When you look at BRT projects that are coming in for the sort of attractive lower cost per mile figure, they're running in the 10 to 15 mile an hour range, and that's not the same level of mobility. So I would offer that back. I think to John's question earlier about the $262 million, and I would just kind of reiterate what I said earlier, which is we recognize that that's out there. And we're focused on getting the cap removed right now. And like I said, with where the federal government would evaluate a project in this portion of the life cycle, they would say you're actually doing better than average on getting the ducks in a row. Of course, they want you to have it all set up by the time you go to construction. And I think on a project that has such a long time frame, that's kind of normal. But when we think about how we might, you know, go out and build a bus stop, that's not the way we do it. We want to have the money we want to go. And I think the other question that you're asking is the fact that that funding needs to be worked on going to compete with the other need that you've identified here today? And the answer is no. We've set aside money in the Durham County Bus and Rail Investment Plans and the Orange County Plans to try to deliver those, the bus projects and the sidewalk projects, as effectively as we can. We have experienced some changes in the state funding for buses since we adopted those plans in 2011 and 2012. And so we have been trying, Brian's team has been working through this, our team has been working through this on how we make sure that we have vehicles in a state of good repair. But at the same time, we're still doing our best to execute on building sidewalks, getting the shelters on the street. That stuff's important, and it's not going to be shunted aside because of these longer project issues.
And we are getting a little short on time, so very quickly here we'll go Mr. Martin and Mr. Harrison, and then see if we have any time for anything else.
I wanted to ask a different question, which is, what kind of estimates have you made of safety with regard to this system? Because Amtrak in Durham has the highest rate of fatalities of hitting people in the city of Durham of any place in the state. And that's with a couple trains a day. Now in Durham, the light rail system is going to be making at-grade crossings on Buchanan Boulevard, Gregson Street, Duke Street, Chapel Hill Street, Blackwell Street, Mangum Street, Roxborough Street, and Dillard Street. Now that may not mean too much to your Chapel Hill listeners, but people in Durham know that's a That's, mm-hmm. Those are a lot of very busy streets. What kind of safety issues do you see there?
So first, great question. And I would say to folks who are listening, if you're near the proposed light rail line and you have concerns about safety at any of the grade crossings, the most important thing you can do is be talking to us, because we're going to be doing design of the safety features over the next few years. And what goes into that? So every grade crossing gets looked at by the Federal Transit Administration, but also we have a really good resource in the NCDOT Rail Division. There are some types of rail fatalities that you can't prevent, and suicides, unfortunately, are among them. Some of the ones that you're talking about in Durham happen to be in that category. Others are motorists not getting the message that the lights are, the bells and things like that. And so DOT Rail Division, if you look at the highway, sort of the fatalities at rail crossings in North Carolina over the last decade, you will see a very strong, steady downward trend. And some of these things are very simple, just like putting median dividers so when the gate comes down, the car can't go from the right lane to the left and go around. We intend to take advantage of DOT Rail's expertise in doing that, and we're going to have them sort of look over our shoulder and look at all the grade crossings to see what can be done, and troubleshoot us and give us corrections where we think it's needed. I think the other piece of it is that there's technology on train detection that's improving all the time, and so we're going to see if are there ways that you can get new sort of both awareness features for motorists, but also getting the latest information to the train operator so that they're aware of anything that might be up ahead on the track that's unusual. So safety is critical. If you don't do safety right, nothing else matters, and we take it real seriously. And I would say, just if you're along one of those streets that John named, if you're interested, keep talking to us. We're going to be working on the design of those from the safety perspective, and we want to work with the neighborhoods on them.
All right, Mr. Harrison, you had your hand raised up as we are closing down.
Yeah, it's a fiscal statistic, something that won't be costing the taxpayer anything, which is University of North Carolina's 13 acres of land, which they're really gouging us for, costing us a dollar. Some of that, a chunk of that, is going to be at a Trinity Center around a new station. That gives you some indication of how much development they intend to be doing around Friday Center and how important it is, the main campus, that land be available for the system.
Well, this has been a wonderful debate. I'm sure we could go into another hour, but we've got another very important hour coming up next, talking about inclusion in our community, and of course that has really heated up over the last month. So community members and elected officials and people involved with this, thank you so much. John Martin, Alex Cabanis, Ed Harrison, Brian Litchfield, Patrick McDonough. It was a wonderful discussion, and we've got more coming your way on the WCHL Community Forum.